are you and what are you doing here?
Hi, everybody.
Well, what are we waiting for?
This is fantastic.
Hello, hello, hello.
This will only hurt for 22 minutes.
It's very early. I may have to hurt you. Call me in 5 minutes.
This is something that is treatable. This is something that is fixable.
Hey, this is not a test.
Oh, my God, it's early.
Welcome aboard the Amy Beth Arkowitz Show, weaving together a mosaic of voices from the arts, pop culture, personal growth, and justice. How are you? Another tough day, I know. You've heard about the terrorist attacks in Brussels, both at the airport and metro station. Over 35 people killed, we know right now, over 170 injured. It is a tough day in Europe and all over the world. We'll talk a little bit about the impact of those attacks on the presidential race here in the United States coming up today. I want to get your views. Who do you feel safer with now in terms of going forward? And do these attacks change things in the metrics and the political race? Weigh in today with your views. If you're listening live, it is Tuesday, March 22nd, 9 a.m. out west, 11 central, noon here in the east. Number in motion, 347-857-4505. You know by now it's a 24/7 proposition at Twitter. So whether you're listening live or on podcast, you can chime in at AB Writes. Facebook page, Aurora tells us, is also open. A couple of people chiming in already there. Please make your comments under the promo. The show today being brought to you in part by Lowe's. Spring has sprung. Get ideas and savings at Lowe's. Also by PopNet, arts, culture, and conversation on air, online. PopNet features select editions of the Amy Beth Arkowitz Show. And by the Oak Center for Lifelong Learning. It's never too late to embrace your dreams. Live the life you've always wanted. Details on upcoming spring workshops. Find out ASAP at oakcenterlearning.org. And we have a great guest today who will help us bridge the partisan divide that we find ourselves in, because it seems that we are living in very divided times in this country. People are entrenched in their narratives, hanging out snugly in their own echo chambers. But can we bridge that gap and come to some compromise and come to some common ground? I think we can, and our guest certainly thinks we can. Mark Gerzon is a noted mediator, best-selling author of Leading Through Conflict, and his new book, The United States of America, How We Can Bridge the Partisan Divide, is very timely indeed, and we welcome him to the show. Hey, Mark, thank you so much for joining us today.
It's good to be with you, and glad to talk about the reunited States of America.
Did I not get that right? Did I say United?
You said United States of America, which is what we're all striving for, I'm sure.
Yeah, the reunited States, absolutely. Talk to us a little bit about what's going on today in terms of how does that either help or hurt the conversation, because sometimes when something tragic happens, we come together as a nation. We certainly did in the wake of 9/11. Do you think this can help us get a better conversation, or are we just going to find ourselves more entrenched in our own narratives as we've been doing so for the last couple of years?
Well, I write about that in the book, and I talk about how, yes, crises used to bring us together. I would say before Katrina and before, some of these viruses and before Ebola, some of those crises, perhaps 9/11 was the last one that brought us together. Ever since 9/11, we've seen a new and very, very unfortunate direction, which is a crisis like this, or the death of a Supreme Court justice. There's a moment of reverence, a moment of pause, and then the hyperpartisan toxic debate takes over. And my feeling is, you asked, a moment ago, who do you feel safer with to deal with this threat of ISIS? And I've recently written a piece in which I said, the real safety comes from being united. And if we're divided in a Trump country and in a Clinton country, if we're divided in half, we're not in a very good position to defend ourselves. So I think the most important thing is for us to come together. Otherwise, we're a sitting duck.
That's an interesting point. I know you put forth an intriguing op-ed piece, which other folks either got their hands on or echoed the same sentiment of having what you called a fusion or unity ticket with Clinton and Kasich. I think John Kasich, who has delusions of Lincoln running through his head, put the kibosh on that last Friday on Hardball. I don't know if you saw his comments, but he really has no interest in being anybody's vice president.
I know, yes.
But
unity has to come at a deeper level than just sticking two people together.
Well, of course. Of course, but I'm talking about the op-ed piece that you wrote that said this would be a good idea.
Right.
To have this.
Well, I'm being critical of myself and saying, while it might be nice to dream of a Clinton-Kasich ticket, I think the unity we're looking for has to happen between your listeners, some of whom I'm sure are Clinton supporters and some are Kasich supporters, et cetera. And we have to find that place in ourselves that says we're willing to work through our differences to find common ground. Do we still have that as Americans?
Well, that's what I always ask, and I'm glad you pointed out, because I do have some listeners who are Clinton supporters, Trump supporters, Kasich supporters, et cetera, but there are a lot of places where it's the echo chamber. As you know, this is part of our problem in this country, that people seem to find the radio shows, the TV shows, the blogs, the websites that only speak to what they already believe, and I think that's part of our problem. You know, in the old days, you had three channels. Everybody watched the news at the same time, and there was still a more sense of coming together. So that's part of the issue, right?
Well, yeah, it is, and it's why I appreciate programs like yours, and it's why I believe so strongly that being a citizen doesn't mean going out and saying, I'm right, you're wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Being a citizen means going out there and saying, here's my strongly held opinion, what's yours? Okay, now how do we solve this problem for ourselves and for our community and for our children? You know, that's, to me, being a citizen, and unfortunately the citizen idea of being a citizen has shifted to this I'm right, you're wrong attitude, which is, you know, which really won't get you much beyond your front door.
Exactly. So what do you think? You've been working at this kind of important work for so many years as a mediator in civic organizations and companies. What do you think people should do? I mean, how do we get started if we want to have those kind of conversations with our neighbors, with our fellow citizens? What do we do?
A great question. And in the United States of America, I profile about 40 groups that have an answer to that question. I profile a group that says, if you want to have a dialogue in your living room, here's what you can do. I profile a group that says, if you want your state legislature to come together and start solving problems for your state, here's what you can do. I profile groups that say, if you've got a community problem or a community issue and you want your community to take action, here's what you can do. And I also profile some groups that say, you know, if you want the media change or you want Congress to change, here's what you can do. So I don't have a single, you know, here's what you can do, fix everything, but I do feel that the main thing that needs to happen, and you're doing it with this show, is we need to start shining a spotlight on a different kind of hero, a different kind of patriot. We need to start shining a spotlight on the people who cross the divide. And I respect the candidates, but the candidates aren't going to bridge the divide. They're actually creating the divide. And the citizens, we, the people, have to remember that to hold this country together, we have to bridge the divide. So pick any level you want, and I'm glad to talk in detail about it. But in my book, I talk literally about every level from your living room to Congress.
Well, talk to us about political spectrum, because that's what we're on right now, and people are concerned in terms of the presidential race. What do you think about the rhetoric that's going on, and how can they change it, and how can we affect it in any way? I mean, individual citizens don't have the power to change the discussion. Clearly, the media does, and the media did, in my opinion, the mass media has done a pretty poor job of it starting in the summer when every time Donald Trump burped, they went to a live rally to let him talk for an hour and a half. I mean, that was not exactly helpful.
I couldn't agree with you more. And when I say in the subtitle of the book that we can bridge the partisan divide, I mean we the people. So it doesn't mean that you and I and your listeners today can change the way Trump and Clinton and Kasich and Cruz behave. We can't. They're going to behave the way they behave. What we can change is the way we behave and the way we vote and what we tune into. And so, for example, you know, I talk in my book about AllSides.com. Well, AllSides.com is a startup in Silicon Valley that if you tune into AllSides.com and go to their website, you'll get the news from the center perspective, from a sort of right-of-center conservative perspective, and from a liberal left-of-center perspective. You get all three at the same website, and you can start to become aware of what it means for the news to be slanted and the news to be straight, and you can come up with your own opinion about, you know, which of those points of view makes sense to you, and you can become aware that there are these different points of view, and when you go to the supermarket, and when you go to your children's school, or when you go to the office, you're going to be with people who hold those different points of view, to oversimplify left, right, and center. So to me, that's becoming politically literate. And I think that's the first thing we need to do, is to become politically literate and become aware of the fact that our opinions aren't the only opinions under the sun. And, you know, they never will be. And I've been, you know, I've been watching elections since the 60s, and, you know, what I've noticed is partisanship isn't going to go away. It's going to be there, you know, in 2020 and 2024.
Sure,
they're going to be partisan. And so the question is, can we have partisanship and still solve the problems that we face? And we're mentioning ISIS today because it's in the news. And my feeling is, you know, everybody's saying, elect me, I'll protect us. Elect me, I'll protect us. And I believe strongly that what will protect us is a country that remembers how to act in unity and in some unison and to sustain a policy for more than, you know, 10 minutes. Before, you know, somebody criticizes you or you elect somebody else. So I feel this, what you're focusing on today, is absolutely crucial.
or changing the policy within every other day, the same person, which happens too.
That's
sometimes.
Right. So that's right. I mean, and every time Obama lifts his finger, he gets slammed, not by ISIS, but by his fellow Americans. And Bush had the same thing in the latter years of his administration. And whoever gets elected in 2016, which is why I'm asking voters to think, yes, care about who gets elected, in November, care about who you vote for. But that's about 50% of the picture. The other 50% of the picture is on the day after the election, the person you voted for and the person you didn't vote for are going to have to work together to make the country move forward. And right now, the country's not moving forward on the infrastructure, on education, on the economy, on foreign policy, on climate change. It's not moving forward on anything because it's paralyzed. And I don't think that serves anybody's interests.
No, I agree with you. And also, I think the allsides.com is a great thing. We're going to put up that site for people to take a look at, because I think becoming politically literate is so crucial. And I always impose this on my listeners, everybody I talk to, that you can have any opinion you want. You're entitled to it. And you don't have to base your opinion on facts, but it would help. So learn the facts. Learn the policies. Learn all these things before you immediately – and we do, I think, vote – even those of us who get a handle on the facts and know about the policies that the candidates stand for, there is a combination of that knowledge and also your visceral reaction to the candidate and their personality and how you think his or her temperament would play out in the White House. I mean, I think people do vote a little bit with their gut, but you shouldn't just go with your gut. I think you have to be armed with something else beyond that. At least that's my opinion on it. Everybody, yeah, as
exactly.
I said, you can have your opinion, but it's harder to argue with somebody or have any kind of a discussion with somebody who just doesn't have the facts.
Well, and that's why I say the first step of three steps is learning. The first step of being a citizen is learning. The second step is to realize you're in a relationship. being a citizen is being in a relationship with people who disagree with you, and they're not going to go away. You know, they're not going to disappear tomorrow. They're still going to be there. And so the second step is being willing to be in a relationship and work at the relationship. And the third step is to take problems seriously and try to solve them. And almost every time when I'm mediating between two sides, which I've done a lot of since I worked with Congress in the 90s and all sorts of groups across the divide, I always say, let's focus on the problem. Do you want to solve this problem? And in the case of the current moment, and some of the issues around guns, I will say to people, do you want your children to be safer when they go to school tomorrow? Or do you want to recite your point of view about that's pro-gun or anti-gun? Because reciting your views pro or anti-gun, your children are going to be going to the same school with the same level of insecurity tomorrow as they are today. So what I try to do is that third step is critical, and I feel that, that's one of the things that I'm most excited about, is that there's actual progress on certain issues now today, like criminal justice reform and other issues, where people are sitting down and saying, this is a critical problem, we need to fix it. And it's also happening around police and community relations. People are starting to say, this is out of hand. And I think when the economy gets worse, people are going to actually demand that our politicians stop doing sound bites and blaming each other and sit down, because the American people know they've been robbed, they just don't know by whom. And we've got to sit down and get some straight answers and fix the economy. And that's what many of the candidates are saying, but then they turn against each other and argue with opposite facts as if it's all a game. And it's not a game. It's real people's lives, real people's incomes, real people's education, real people's health depends on solving problems.
Well, it's a tipping point, because in Congress, Congress has the lowest approval rating. By the way, President Obama has a pretty good one. He's over 50% now. Congress in the low 20s. And yet, very rarely do the incumbents get ousted. So people, there's a disconnect with how we feel. We have, discomfort and disappointment with how they're doing business, but yet we keep reelecting the same people.
We do, and that's why, for me, I'm as interested in the other 364 days of the year as I am in the day when people vote. Because people are always saying, be a responsible citizen, vote. Well, I agree with that. In November, please go vote. But the other 364 days, we're actually doing a lot in terms of who we talk to, who we don't talk to, who we blame, who we don't blame, who we buy from, who we don't buy from. There's a lot of ways that I describe in the United States of America that you can be an engaged and active citizen that's helping to reunite this country rather than divide the country. And obviously, I have my preferences about candidates. But I lost my illusions a long time ago that my candidate was going to fix things. Because when I talk to folks, I don't know what it's like for you with your program, but when I've talked to folks, I talk to Republicans and I say, were you happy with the 8 years of George Bush? Did you get what you wanted? And they say, no. And I say to liberal Democrats, well, you've had pretty much 8 years of Obama. Have you gotten what you wanted? And they say, well, not really. So people, I think, are starting to wake up to the fact that, electing your knight on a white horse isn't actually going to fix things.
Well, because that's what I call the magic wand theory. I keep saying there's not going to be a magic wand under, you know, whoever it may be. It could be Bernie Sanders' very oversized jacket. There's not a magic wand that's going to make all these problems going to go away. They have to work within the system. So when they talk about the outsiders, that's also interesting to me because whether you think Donald Trump is an outsider or not is another debatable question. But even if he is, he's, you know, he can't just wave away the issues. He's not waving away Congress. They're still there. The system is there. You have to be able to work within it and make some changes. So, yeah, I think people are looking for very easy answers. They don't want to really do the learning part. That's the hard stuff. And they don't want to really have to work at it too much. They want somebody to fix it for them. That's the issue. We just want somebody to
fix
it.
Right, and the starting point, you know, I'm in my own community. I'm giving a talk at a local bookstore. And authors do this all the time, you know, and the bookstore said, you know, you've written the United States of America, come and talk. So I said, okay, I'll come and talk. But I said, I'm not going to just do another author talk. I said, I want to work with you to make sure that the room is filled with half people from our community who are right of center and half people who are left of center. Will you work with me to ensure that we have that kind of an audience? And then let's really have a community dialogue where we say, what are our community ground rules for talking across the divide? Because if we're going to complain, if we're going to complain about the candidates, let's do a better job in our own community. So I'm trying to walk my talk by actually, you know, taking this book event and turning it into a community dialogue that will set ground rules for the community that we will follow.
Fascinating. I think that's interesting. Have you ever walked away from a mediation? I mean, you've been doing this for decades, whether it's in Congress or a community group or company where you just said these people are not willing to work it out. I can't
help
you.
I have. I think I can tell you this. I don't think it's any long. No, I think it's no longer confidential that I would go off-site with members of Congress or their chiefs of staff to a secure site in West Virginia, and they would pick an issue, and we would practice dialogue as opposed to, you know, counterattacks and attacks. We would practice dialogue around an issue, and this was funded by a foundation, and they got some support. So members of the House or their staff would come. We'd make great progress at this, you know, site in West Virginia on an issue, and they'd be excited about the fact that they were starting to learn and develop relationships and solve the problem. They would then go back to Washington, and I would check in with them and say, so how are things going now that you're back at Capitol Hill? And they said, well, we came back excited about the progress we made on this issue, but we talked to the party leaders, and they said, stop it. We're in an election cycle here. We need to beat the other side. We're not here to work with it. We're here to pick an issue and show the voters that we've got a better view than they've got. So just stop that working together. It's got to stop right now. And that's when I stopped doing those off-site retreats because I realized these chiefs of staff mostly were getting really frustrated at making progress privately and then being told on Capitol Hill, no, we can't work together. And I think it's a failure of understanding the nature of leadership. It's the people's house. It's not their house. It's the people's house of representatives.
Yeah, that's very disheartening, and that's also emblematic of why people are so fed up, because it seems like all they're doing is running for re-election or election,
that's right.
And they're not really worried about doing the business.
That's what's happening. It's what I call in my book endless campaigning. It used to be that one campaigned, and then one won or lost, and then governing began. And now everybody agrees that the day after the election, campaigning resumes, and it never really stops. So if campaigning never stops, then governing never really begins. And that's why the people are fed up, and it's why there has to be a fundamental change. And I've got to say, I don't know how many of your listeners are millennials, but millennials really seem to understand this. They're responding very powerfully to my book, and I think they're responding because they've grown up basically since Clinton impeachment. You know, that's what they know of politics. And since Clinton impeachment, it's been one partisan pile up after another. We've been careening from left to right like a car out of control in a demolition derby. And, you know, they're going, wait a minute, that's not interesting. So some of them are kind of going over and saying, oh, I'll just pretend we're all Steve Jobs and start a little company and become an entrepreneur, and I'll pretend that politics doesn't exist. But many, many more of them are saying, look, I'm an independent. They're becoming what some people call a la carte citizens. They're saying, yeah, I'm not going to sign my life over to the Democrats or Republicans. I'm going to think for myself, and on this I'm a liberal, on this I'm a conservative, and don't try to tell me, you know, me with on the internet here, I'm 27 or 31, don't tell me I have to become a Democrat or Republican. Don't tell me I have to be left or right. I want to solve some problems, and I'm going to find innovative solutions. I find it really exciting, the millennials, and I feel there's a sign of hope.
Yeah, well, we'll see about voter turnout in that regard, too. Not that that's the only barometer, as you said, doing your own grassroots and creating your own niches is very important as well. But so far in the primaries, we haven't seen an exorbitant number of millennials coming out and actually voting. They may be going to Bernie Sanders rallies, but they're not voting in that many great numbers because he's not getting
the top. Well, that's what I said, that some of them are checking out and just thinking, well, I'll go into the private sector where things can actually get done and where there's exciting things and innovation. And I respect that up to a certain point. But, you know,
they're not mutually exclusive, though. That's what I would say to people. You can do all of the above.
No, they're not. Yeah. No, you can be an entrepreneur and be innovative and still take some civic responsibility. And that's why I mentioned AllSides.com, because there's the case of a techie, Silicon Valley techie, who said, he happens to be a Republican, but he said, boy, people are getting narrow-minded. It's outrageous how narrow-minded people are getting. We've got to figure out some way. And he's using the Internet and the websites to solve that problem.
Well, I think we should all go to that. I wasn't aware of that site, I have to say, unfortunately. I'm going to check it out today.
It's literally one of 40. Another one I'll mention is just, you know, Living Room Conversations, which is the living room. It doesn't sound political, but it's a way that anybody can say, hey, I've got some neighbors who I know don't agree with me politically. And they basically, Living Room Conversations will tell you exactly how to bring some neighbors over and how to set up your little evening and start in your own neighborhood doing what politicians can't do. Because if we want to criticize them, I feel we have to actually do it differently ourselves. We have to do it differently ourselves. And I make it a point. I tend to be on the liberal side of things, and I make it a point that whenever I do anything now in my work, I always do it with some Republican or conservative partners, because I do it with partners because if it's really going to take off, if it's going to help anybody, if it's going to last, if it's going to be well thought through, it'll probably be better off. It'll probably be better off if we have some cross the aisle energy behind it. And I also find it really stimulating because I get to challenge my assumptions, and I'm interested in learning. I think the founding fathers wanted us to learn. Jefferson said, we need to reinvent democracy every 19 years. He thought a generation was 19 years for whatever reason. And, you know, we haven't been
reinventing. Well, in those days, I guess it was,
That's right.
I think that's so true, because I agree with you, because that's what I like to do with my and I've been radio for a long time, both on internet and terrestrial radio, and it always amazed me, and I did some radio shows in pretty Republican towns, and I'm pretty liberal too, and at first people didn't like me that much, but then they came around to liking me because they realized that I was open to all ideas and all people, and I wasn't making people feel bad if they disagreed with me, which a lot of radio shows are like that. You have to agree with the host, and everybody's on the same page, or you're a foil for insult. And I just don't understand that either.
And
it's not entertaining or enlightening.
That's right. And I've learned a lot from my Republican colleagues that I'm pleased to say that, you know, they've confronted me and they've said, you know, you liberals, if left to your own devices, will just take us deeper and deeper into debt, because you've always find another social program, you've always find another cause, you always find another need to spend money, and you're fiscally irresponsible. And, you know, they have a point. I'm not saying that, you know, George Bush did a better job when he was president. There's a deeper problem than that. But they have a point that there has to be a limit to spending. And if that's what if we need to have conservatives tell us that, then we need conservatives. I feel that the best metaphor that I found is to tell people that, you know, I don't want to live my life with just my left hand or my right hand. You know, God's given us two hands. He's given us two ears. He's given us two eyes because he thinks we're going to do a better job living and being a human being if we have two. So why then, when we have two parties that are left and right, can't we see that they both play a role in taking America forward? And if the left disappeared, this country would be weaker. And if the right disappeared, this country would be weaker. So to me, it's as plain as the two hands that I've got. And I really appreciate you and your show for carrying that kind of energy into the media.
Yeah, we're always searching for common ground. And people, you can have a little discomfort, too, by the way. And I always say that because if you notice on social media in particular, people get very upset if somebody disagrees with you. You know, there's a lot of unfriending going on where people get mad at each other and all this kind of stuff.
Right.
It's like, you know, relax. Unless you're being abusive. One thing I will say, I very rarely unfriend anybody unless they spew some garbage that's homophobic, racist, misogynistic, that kind of thing. But if you're just disagreeing with an opinion or a policy, why should that make me that uncomfortable that I have to unfriend somebody? I don't quite get
that. Well, absolutely, and I wouldn't want our time together to end before I mention, you know, why what you just said is so important to our troops, because they're actually being sent to fight a war. They're being sent to risk their lives on behalf of a country. And then they're sitting there in Iraq or Afghanistan, and they read about what's happening in Washington, where somebody's saying, oh, we should send more troops. And someone else says, that's ridiculous. We shouldn't send any troops. The troops that are there should come back right now. They're wasting their time. And I'm going, what is it like to be risking your life for a country where the very reason you're there is being debated and the next person elected might just turn around and say, that was a complete waste. We're not doing that anymore. I mean, it's like, I'm not saying as a country we can't change our mind, but we really owe it to our troops when we send young men and women overseas to fight. And I quote in my book, one of the first interviews in the United States of America is with an Army captain who says, you know, the first time I became aware of this problem when I was in Jalalabad, and I'm sitting there and we're trying to win a war in Afghanistan, and suddenly my medevac choppers are disappearing, and a lot of my material support's disappearing, and some of my troop support's disappearing, and we haven't finished the job, and my men are now, you know, at risk, and it takes longer to take a wounded soldier back to the hospital because our medevac choppers have been all sent to Iraq. And he's sitting there going, why is our stuff being sent to Iraq? I don't get it. So he starts studying, and you know, he can't make any sense why he's being undercut in Afghanistan and sending, and he sees men die because they're not getting enough medical care because of it. And I'm interviewing him, and my heart's really breaking because this is about politics. You know, we owe it to not only to our troops but to ourselves not to play games with people's lives. And you know, healthcare is not as dramatic as war, but I feel like it's the same thing. You know, it's we're playing politics with whether somebody gets proper medical care. I think it's immoral. It's immoral. When hyperpartisanship starts to paralyze the systems we depend on, it's immoral.
Yeah. I think you're so right. I think that's very profound, and I think people need to, as you said, open your ears and open your hearts. Have a generous heart when you're listening, too. You know, try to, you know, hear where the other person's coming from. And yeah. Get the facts. That's where you got to start. Get the facts. So we're going to take a look at allsides.com and some other sites like that. And also people can find out more about Mark Gerzon and your book, The Reunited States of America, How We Can Bridge the Partisan Divide. You have a website for this, yes?
I do. Just go to markgerzon.com. And also I've just noticed that it's the number one book on Amazon in new releases in government at the moment, so it's not hard to find.
Wow, congratulations. That's great. We will post links to your website and to this podcast when it's up and running as such. Mark, thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate it, and good luck, and thank you so much for the important work you're doing.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for your show.
Take care. Thank you. That's Mark Gerzon. As we said, we will post all the links for you. The book is The Reunited States of America. Find out more at markgerzon.com. It is the end of the Dark Week. We'd love to hear what you're thinking. Twitter feed, of course, is AB Writes. If you're listening live on Tuesday, March 22nd, you can chime in via the phone line, 347-857-4505. Let's get talking. Singers wrapping their soulful interpretation around that Buffalo Springfield tune on the Amy Beth Arkowitz Show. Also, the Beatles, Come Together, a tune that was written way back when for Timothy Leary's insurgent, sarcastic presidential bit. Mm-hmm. Come Together. Good words and advice, no matter where they emanate from, right? Thanks again going out to Mark Gerzon, the author of The Reunited States of America. Find out more at his website, markgerzon.com. As always, we'll post all the links after the show, including the link to this show when it is archived for podcast. On the Twitter feed at AB Writes, new folks chiming in. Sam says, hey, intriguing interview, good ideas, but people don't want to do the heavy lifting. Yeah, you got a point there, and I always say that too. People don't want to learn the facts, don't want to get a handle on all these things, but it is part of your job as a citizen. So I guess my advice to you, Sam, like I always say, you be the model. You go do it and lead the way in your own community and in your own way that you can. Try it. Phelps says, as for who would be the best president, certainly not Donald Trump. Crazy erratic policies and a scary temperament. Mm-hmm. But Sally says, Trump sounded presidential today. Did he? I think what I heard was he was once again talking about sealing off the borders, restricting Muslims from coming in the country, and ratcheting up the notion of legalizing torture. Not great. I know it sounds good. Again, people want to hear these simple solutions, and he has that strongman mentality that appeals to so many people, like he will just fix it. It's scary to me, because with the torture issue, I mean, I know, knee-jerk reaction, everybody is like, well, I don't care about the bad guys. Do what you have to do. But think about this. Besides the humanitarian issue, which is an issue, and the morality of it, you're also putting your own troops and your own dignitaries and traveling business people and students and missionaries. In fact, three Mormon missionaries, American Mormon missionaries, were in the Brussels attacks, unfortunately, as victims. You're putting these people at harm's way when you lessen war crimes, Geneva Convention rules, all of those things. Remember a few weeks ago, Donald Trump said something similar about, we're just going to do, even if it violates the Geneva Convention, they're just going to do what I tell them to do because I'm the commander-in-chief. And all these military officials came out and said, uh-oh, that's not going to be good. And he had to backtrack. This is what I'm talking about erratic behavior and changing your mind from one minute to the next and when you don't have fixed policy. He finally did, I will say to his credit, announce that he had some sort of a foreign policy team in place, which included Jeff Sessions from Alabama, say what you will about him, and several retreads from the George Bush administration, George W. Bush administration. Again, if those people's policies worked for you and you thought they were good for this country, then so be it. Of course, it is better, at least he has got some advisors, rather than his first comment last week when asked about who gave him advice in these matters. He said, well, the first person I listen to is myself because I have a very good brain and I said a lot of things. I don't know. You got to listen. When people, what's the old expression? I forget who coined it. When someone tells you who they are, listen, or shows you who you are, listen to them. I mean, they're not lying. Here it is. You see what he is, who he is, on display every day, in every way, and whatever he says. I'm just suggesting that. On the Facebook page, Pat says, regarding who would be the best choice for president, not Hillary, that's for sure. Madge on Twitter, says, obviously it can't be Bernie. He doesn't have the gravitas. leaning towards Hillary, but Kasich's good too. All right, so there we go, all over the spectrum, as our listeners are wont to be. Chime in with your views. AB writes on the Twitter feed, phone line if you're listening live on Tuesday, March 22nd, 347-857-4505. That also applies to the Facebook page, promo on the top of the page, if you're so inclined to talk a lot, or even if you're not. That's okay too. Speaking of politics, though, if it's Tuesday, someone's voting somewhere in this country in the primary season, and that's no different today. Republicans and Democrats both have primaries in Utah and Arizona, and the Democrats have their caucus in Idaho, which I think was already done for the Republicans a while back. I still don't get why they're not on the same page in all these states, but they're not. Go figure. So we'll see what happens. Bernie says he's hanging in. He believes he has a good westward mission and may run the table today. I don't know. We'll see what happens. Although Hillary Clinton apparently has a big lead in Arizona, according to the polls, but they were wrong in Michigan, and they can sometimes be wrong, as we well know. But however you slice it, politics can be a circus. Here's a little snippet, a little teaser from Mark McKinnon and Mark Halpern and John Heilman on their Showtime series, The Circus.
You really have to want to be president to run, because I mean, it can just crush the life out of you.
Most powerful moment in politics when your neighbor tells you who they're going to vote
sure.
for. Yeah,
we were on the campaign together.
We were in the trenches.
It's like Mount Rushmore, Field of Dreams, and American Gothic all in one.
Where are we? We're in heaven.
We live in a
was a teenage anarchist, looking for revolution. I had the style, I had the ambition, read all the authors, I knew the rock slogans. There was a war, bought the class war, I was ready to set the world on fire. I was a teenage anarchist, looking for revolution.
Universe to all these faceless people, and you can pretend that they're hanging on your every word.
I don't know if you've noticed, but this year is just a really glorious time to be in the political satire business. Sometimes it feels like the candidates are trying to give us material. So, as a rule, we in the Capitol Steps don't like to complain much. But there is one thing.
Oh, finding rhymes for candidates like Cruz isn't hard. There's many we could choose. But we're not punning someone else who's also running, because John Kasich is the hardest rhyme. Oh, he's the hardest rhyme. Oh, he's the hardest.
We'd make jokes about Kasich round the clock, how he looks a lot like Mr. Spock. But we can't say that we found, to our great dismay, that the name John Kasich is too hard to rhyme. It seems like Ohio is cursed. Last time was the worst. We thought we were finished, 8 years back, about the same time, we sure couldn't find a rhyme for Kucinich. So each person here should now take note. Think about our writers when you vote. We can't rhyme Kasich, so our problem's really basic. We sure hope Kasich doesn't win this time.
Capital Steps having their fun with Kasich. It's the hardest rhyme. On the Amy Beth Arkoui Show, Against Me, remember the days when you were a teenage anarchist in Bob Dylan's political world. We are indeed in the midst of a big political season. It is the Amy Beth Arkoui Show, Twitter feed the buzz. Like it that way at AB Wright, some differing opinions, which just shows how all over the map our listenership is, and that's always great, too. Claire says, Donald Trump, ouch, showed himself to be a vulgarian yet again with his rhetoric this morning. Too extreme for some, I guess. But Bonnie says, presidential and strong, Trump is pivoting, beware Dems. Yeah, can he do it? I mean, can he pivot? I guess he's trying to sound more presidential, but it'll just be that easy to do. People won't remember what he said before. And by the way, I don't know that sealing up the borders and ratcheting up torture is really pivoting to a more moderate tone, but we'll see how it all plays out, as they say. Meanwhile, Bud said, hate to say it, but Cruz will be the consensus candidate for the Republicans. Hard to swallow, even Lindsey Graham on board. Yeah, we talked about this, I think, last week. Lindsey Graham, who was not exactly a Cruz supporter for a very long time, is getting involved in a fundraiser for Ted Cruz because he sees him as the best alternative to Donald Trump. A big difference from he used to say, with Trump or Cruz is a question of how do you want to get killed, gunshot or poison. But we'll see. Are people really rallying? I mean, they have the Never Trump movement. Donald Trump, on the other hand, was at the Washington Post for a sit-down yesterday, kind of gathering people like Newt Gingrich and other folks to help him as the insurgent translating into or transforming into the establishment candidate, because he says it's time for people to embrace me and rally around. He believes he's going to have the requisite magic 1237 number of delegates by the time he reaches the convention. A lot of people say he might just fall short, and therefore you could have a contested convention which could make John Kasich, who will probably have the least number of delegates, certainly of the last three standing, as he enters the floor, you know, Lincoln-esque. On the third ballot, Abraham Lincoln won in 1860. But 1860, they didn't have the mass media and the social media and the 24/7 cabled matrix and all that stuff that we have now, so I don't know how it's going to play out. Of course, he uses the polls to say that he has the best shot of beating Hillary Clinton. And, of course, in the most recent polls, it looks like he's the only one out of those three that can beat Hillary Clinton. Bernie Sanders, of course, uses the argument that he should be the Democratic nominee because he beats Trump even better than Hillary beats Trump. You know, we'll see. Again, polls are just snapshots of what's happening that day with that particular group of people they poll. So I'm always a little skeptical and skittish on these polls on either side. I mean, with people saying, oh, Trump will be easy to win and easy to beat, I don't know. You know, and I'm more on the Democratic side of things, but I'm not so sure. I mean, we have to be careful of getting too complacent and thinking that it's going to be a breeze. I don't think it's a breeze either way, and I think things can change, and polls change. So it's a snapshot of what's happening today. And as you know more about candidates, as I said, you know, with Hillary, there's so much out there about her for 25-plus years. Bernie Sanders, you know, he's been around even longer than Hillary, I guess. He's been in government for a long time, but he's pretty much had more, you know, backbenching kind of gigs. Senator of Vermont, I mean, he's done some great things. I'm not saying not, but he hasn't been as high profile on the national stage. As he gets vetted, there are things that come out about his past that are kind of odd, that particular rape essay that I'm sure they'll play up, his socialism, which they turn into communism, will be played up. Anti-Semitism is already rearing its head. We talked about that crackpot pastor that came out on television and said he has no business running because he hasn't been saved. All of this stuff is going to come out, you know, be ratcheted up against him should he get the nomination, which doesn't mean you shouldn't vote for him if you want him to, but I'm just saying I don't know that in gaming that he can beat Trump by five more points than Hillary can beat Trump at this particular point is the reason to support him. You should support him because he puts forth your agenda, and also the electability issue is something which you should think about if you are on the Democratic side or the Republican side. But it doesn't seem like people are worried about that so much. On the Republican end anyway, those who like Donald Trump love Donald Trump, and they don't care. And in fact, some people on the Republican end of things who never say Trump will go with Cruz even if they think Cruz would lose. So it's odd as gaming, and which goes against the conversation we were having earlier with Mark Gerzon about trying to find common ground and make compromise. What's wrong with that? I think what really is so funny and frustrating for a lot of voters and viewers to see is when these Republican opponents are so vehemently against Donald Trump and call him a con man, a flim-flam man, a fraud, all this stuff, but yet at the end they'll say, we'll still support him if he's a nominee. Because that does put party over country. If you really believe this about this guy, then you should not be supporting him even though you took that so-called pledge early in the process, which is ironic since they offered that pledge because they were afraid Donald Trump was going to bolt and go third party, which, by the way, he still can, right? Think about it. If he comes close but doesn't make it and they put in Cruz or Kasich or pull somebody else from left field, pull Ryan, Mitt Romney, whoever, he could still go third party. I mean, where do his supporters go? And with the... Of course, they're talking out if Trump gets the nomination for the Republican Party, they may go also third party. And how hard is it to go third party? But aren't there already these parties there? I mean, there's a conservative party, right? So Cruz or this guy Ben Sasse or other people, if they wanted to, could go on that line and vote, I would think. I don't know how hard it is to lobby for that nomination, but I'm sure they're looking into it. And, of course, for those of us on the Democratic side, the prospect of a third party on the Republican end is delicious, don't you think? Just saying, just suggesting. What's your view? Reach out via Twitter. AV Wright's phone line is 347-857-4505. So shifting gears on a really feel-good story about someone who I think we can all agree, as always, music is the thing that brings everybody together. Bruce Springsteen is indeed a nice guy. Proof positive last week out in California. A young 9-year-old boy was in the audience at his concert, flashed a sign that said, I'm going to be late for school, Bruce. Will you sign my note? And somebody spotted it, Bruce or somebody in his entourage, and they brought the kid backstage after the show, after a 3-plus-hour show. This guy who's 66 years old, still going strong and doing those kind of shows that everybody knows he's been doing for decades, with his dad. He was in the audience with his dad, who's been going to shows since he was a kid, and plucked him out and talked to him. And the dad said he was the first. We were the first people with all these other people standing around backstage, other artists, Mucky Mucks, etc., and they pulled the kid aside, got the kid's name, the name of the teacher, and said, I think it was Ms. Jackson, please excuse Zabie, I think the kid's name was. And he asked how to spell the name a whole bit, and because he was at the show. And, of course, the father, who's been a fan forever, is 48, he said it made a 9-year-old boy's heart flutter as well as a 48-year-old boy. So, Bruce Springsteen, you thought he was a nice guy? Another confirmation that he is. I wonder, though, if Ms. Jackson ever heard this particular song. Bruce Springsteen and No Surrender. I'm Amy Beth Arcusha.
raise up the mass. Rejoice, rebel, the storm is past. Cast off the crutches, cut off the cast. Rejoice, rebel, the storm is past. Rejoice, rebel, the storm is past. I don't want to spend the whole of my life indoors. Lay low, I'm waiting on the next storm.
Springsteen's No Surrender. The boss, he's a good guy. We knew that, right? Just hope Ms. Jackson, when she gets that tardy note, doesn't remember that song and the lyrics. We learn more from a 3-minute record than we ever learned in school. Ouch. But we knew he was a good guy, and music brings people together, as Shay pointed out. Hey, even Chris Christie's a Springsteen fan. Yeah. Springsteen may not be a Christie fan, though. It doesn't always work both ways, but... Good stuff indeed. Also on the Twitter feed at AB Writes, lots of folks chiming in about what's happening politically these days. Carl says, never Trump, never sounded better after what he said this morning. No way. Some people thought it was presidential, other people not so much. I'm in the not so much category, but I see where the strength appeals to a certain segment of society, for sure. And Tanya says, HRC all the way. She was strong and steady at AIPAC and this morning. I kind of thought she was a little shaky because you could see she's trying to sound stronger and more strident than President Obama on these security issues. She's going to bridge that in a gentle way. But she said pretty much what they all said except Trump, you know, standing behind everybody, unifying, being vigilant. That's what they have to say. So everybody's sort of on the same page except you go for temperament. You go for, you know, do they change their ideas and their policies so quickly, like somebody like Trump, for example? I mean, say what you will about Ted Cruz, he's pretty steadfast in his opinions. As I believe also is case against Clinton. So think about that. Interesting that Bernie Sanders, a Jewish candidate in this case, he happens to be Jewish, didn't appear at AIPAC. Now, I was wondering what that was about. It turned out it had nothing to do with AIPAC particularly. He wanted to deliver his message via video or satellite because he was on a campaign trail out west and couldn't make it back in time, I guess, and they were not thrilled with that and said no can do. So he was absent. But it kind of seemed like a stark contrast for someone who is of Jewish heritage not to appear at the pro-Israeli groups confab. And Trump there, the big story with Trump apparently, and I only saw a smidge of it because I just can't watch him too often. I mean, that's just me. Everybody's entitled. He used a teleprompter for the first time, a prepared speech, and I guess he hit all the right notes, except a lot of the people thought he sounded patronizing, that he was saying it just to say it. I'm not sure if that's true or how it really played out. Apparently he has been, as we know, has stuck his foot in it a few times in the past with the Jewish community and some of the things he said and some of the jokes he's made. And, of course, his stance seems a little wiggly when it comes to Israel. You know, he's going to be neutral, he's going to negotiate, and they don't really want to hear that. I do think you have to negotiate. I mean, I don't think there's anything wrong with that, and you have to be open to both sides. And a lot of people, even people who are pro-Israel, believe a two-state solution is the answer. But he's not as steadfast in his allegiance to Israel as is Ted Cruz. Ted Cruz also, by the way, happens to have a very anti-Semitic pastor who is one of his staunch supporters. So, you know, beware when people are pro-Israel, it's not always because they're pro-Jewish. Just think about it. But anyway, that's what's going on today. We'll see how it plays out tonight in the elections. Arizona, Idaho, Utah up for grabs for the Democrats, Arizona and Utah for the Republicans. And I think Ted Cruz actually has a sizable lead in Utah right now. Donald Trump probably will win Arizona, and John Kasich picking up the rear. I guess there's a feud going on now between Kasich and Cruz a little bit because Cruz wants Kasich, frankly, to step aside. Kasich doesn't want to do that because, as I said, he's got those delusions of Lincoln running through his head. He believes he's going to be that, you know, last man standing when the time comes on a second, third, fourth, or eighth ballot. We'll see. It could be fun this summer just to watch it as an observer, that's for sure. Reach out with your views, AB Wright's phone line, if you're listening live on Tuesday, March 22nd, 347-857-4505. Appreciate the live tweets, because I know we have so many more listeners on podcast, and this show, as they all are, will be archived as such. When it's ready, we'll post it, as we do. So let's do our Inspiration to Action Challenge. Shout out today to Muriel in Queens, New York. We're getting a lot of New Yorkers. My backyard, I love it these days. Says she's working on a collection of short stories that, frankly, I shelved a while ago, but after I got involved in the challenge, it got me motivated. So I guess it works. I guess so, Muriel. I'm so happy for you. Keep going. Please keep us posted. If the Inspiration to Action Challenge has worked for you, I'd love to hear about it. Reach out via the website. That's it. AmyBethArkawy.com, A-R-K-A-W-Y, easy access via the Twitter feed. And, hey, Twitter just celebrated its 10th anniversary. So happy belated anniversary, Twitter, yesterday. Speaking of Twitter, social media looms large. In the latest Eliza Gordon mystery, it's going to come out next month. Murder, She Tweets is coming out next month, so get ready. And while you're at the website, you can peruse the two, the first two in the series, Killing Time and Dead Silent, now available for ebook and paperback. So get on board and check it out when you can. And if you need a creativity coaching conversation, let's start one. First one is always on me. I can cajole you, get you going. You know, it'll give you a primer on the challenge and other things that we might get started to get you back into a great creative mode. Can't promise, but we'll try. Give me a week or two to connect, and we'll do it. How about that? So spring sprung, and in the Northeast, in the New York area, we had a little bit of snow. But it's nice when it snows in the spring, because it snowed late on Sunday night. By mid-Monday morning, it was all gone. So the snowbird knows what they're talking about. It's a great one from Anne Murray.
Beneath this snowy mantle, cold and thin, the unborn grass lies waiting for its coat to turn to green. The snowbird sings a song he always sings, and seeks to me of flowers that will bloom again in spring. When I was young, my heart was young then too. And anything that it would tell me, that's the thing that I would do. But now I feel such emptiness within, for the thing that I want most in life, the thing that I can't win. Spread your tiny wings and fly away, and take the snow back with you where it came from on that day. So what I love forever is untrue, and if I could, you know that I would fly away with you. Along the river seems to say that he'll only break my heart again should I decide to stay. So little snowbird, take me with you when you go to that land of gentle breezes where the peaceful waters flow. Spread your tiny wings and fly away, and take the snow back with you where it came from on that day. What I love forever is untrue, and if I could, you know that I would fly away with you. Yeah, if I could, you know that I would fly away with you.
Little darling, it's been a long, long, lonely winter. Little darling, it seems like years since it's been here. Here comes the sun. Here comes the sun. And I say, it's all right. Little darling, the smiles are returning to the faces. Little darling, it seems like years since they've been there. Here comes the sun. Here comes the sun. And I say, it's all right. Thank you. ice is slowly melting. Still, darling, it seems like years since it's been clear. Oh, here goes the sun. Here comes the sun. And I think it's all right. Here comes the sun, here comes the sun, here comes the sun, and I say it's all right, it's all right, no, 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 it's all right.
Now you
Forgotten 45 for Denny on the Amy Beth Arkley Show, and Richie Havens, Here Comes the Sun, Snowbird from Anne Murray. Welcome to the spring on the Amy Beth Arkui Show. Speaking of which, don't forget this coming Friday we'll re-air our Spring Awakening special, get you into the mood for the season and the holiday weekend. Enjoy it live or on podcast starting Friday at noon. And spring does bring certain things to mind, doesn't it? A couple of last-ditch tweeters. There you go. I always get that wrong. Ed A.B. writes, Andy says, Bernie all the way, he knows it's not a game. And yeah, he had a quote that he gave through an interview with Chris Hayes on MSNBC where he said, the media is getting it wrong, playing it like it's a game. He said, elections and campaigns are not games. They are about making America change. Yeah, well, I think he's right about that. But, you know, the media coverage is what it is. And we've been critical of it for a long time, and I kind of agree with him. People should want to know more about policies, less about personality and sound bites. Unfortunately, that's not the way the world works these days. But we can change that. And one of our guests today, Mark Gurzon, is trying to help us do that. We will post a link to his book, The Reunited States of America. It may change your political consciousness. Look for that and the podcast when the show is ready for that. All the shows are archived as such. You can follow the Amy Beth Arkui Show at the BTR site, Stitcher, Mixcloud, download episodes at iTunes and NetNow, and listen for select editions on PopNet and the Arts Radio Network. Friend me on Facebook. You can follow our producer, Trudy Hart, and Twitter at Radio Trudy. Follow me for the 24-7 conversation on Twitter at AB Writes. So thanks for joining us. Whatever you do, wherever you go, please drive safe, play nice, dream big, and I hope you come back and see us on the Amy Beth Arkui Show. A little exercise, your voting rights, and your biceps. It'll build you up, Buttercup. We'll talk next time. Take care.
Why do you build me up, Buttercup, baby? Just to let me down.
Why do I need you so? Baby, try to find a little.